Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to InnovaBiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
Your business results will always meet your identity, always, every single time, no matter what. So even if you have a blueprint to follow, but if your identity at an identity level, you don't believe that that thing that you are walking on can be done, or there's a sense of disbelief, or it's not congruent with your belief system and identity, it doesn't matter. That's why somebody can take a course and become a millionaire, and that another person could take the exact same course and struggle and get stuck in the same place. It's identity.
Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. And I hope you enjoyed my recent conversations with David Breyer, the brand strategist, and with Tony DeMayo of Big Media USA. I'm really excited to have today on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Patty Dominguez. She's a business growth strategist and a brand positioning expert. Patty helps small business owners achieve category of one status through the power of prolific positioning. She's passionate and driven to inspire her clients to discover their uniqueness in the marketplace and leverage strategies for their business growth so that they can establish a strong value proposition, increased revenues, and a better position in their niche. In our discussion, Patty talked to me about her positioning to profit framework that involves both external as well as internal elements. She explained why mindset is so important to how we position ourselves and how your business results will always meet your identity. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Patty Dominguez. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Chicago in the USA, Patty Dominguez, who's a business growth strategist who helps smart business owners achieve category of one status in their market. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Patty. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
And I am so happy and excited to be sharing the airwaves with you from Chicago all the way to Australia. Isn't it cool?
Yeah, it is cool, isn't
it? It's a lot of fun to do these.
And in this day and age with everybody hunkering down with coronavirus, it's great to have these tools at our disposal.
Absolutely. Very grateful. Mm.
Now, Patty, you also have some podcasts. You host the Positioning to Profit podcast and also the Boss Free Society podcast. So we might touch on podcasting, but before we talk about all things business growth, positioning, and maybe even podcasting, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get to where you are today and into the marketing and market positioning type category?
Well, thank you very much. For me, it was pretty simple of a mandate that I had from my parents. I am the first generation U.S. citizen. My parents were from Central America. My dad was a card painter from Guatemala. My mom was a factory worker from Honduras. And their big dream for me was to go to school, to go to college, to buy a nice car, have a cell phone, and an office. That was literally my dad's vision. And so I was very much programmed to go through those exact steps, you know. And I went to college, and I was probably one of the only Hispanic girls in my high school. I went to an all-girl private Catholic school. And I remember at the time when it was time to figure out careers, the nun had said to me at the time, she's like, a good career for you would be a file clerk. And I knew somehow in my mind that there was a disconnect there. I was like, that doesn't sound right to me. I mean, I feel like there's something different there. So thankfully, I went with my gut because gosh knows, I don't know what would have happened to me, right? I mean, file clerks are now obsolete. But that was the big idea. I did go to college and I was able to do part of my college at the University of Madrid in Spain in order to transfer credits, in order to make it affordable for me. But I worked at an ad agency out there for a little bit. And one of the things that was really interesting was this whole marketing world. I always had an inclination for marketing and advertising. It always seemed really compelling to me. So I just stuck with it because I found it just so fascinating. And I wasn't able to renew my visa at the time. I came back home to the United States. I worked in direct marketing, so direct mail for, I would say, the mid-90s or so. Catalogers would hire the company that I worked for at the time as a privately owned company. I bounced around. I went into a bigger company. I was at Kraft Foods for a while. And while at Kraft Foods, they had said to me, hey, there's a good opportunity for you to focus on cross-functional experience, you know, really making me a well-rounded professional. And while there, I was able to get my MBA because that was another checkbox that I had to check off, right, for my dad. And I did get the big office. And I remember this was, I think it was even in 2012, right as I was leaving Kraft, right, for this, because I did two stints at Kraft. And long story short, I remember I had lunch with my dad. This is before he passed. And he's like, just that whole level of satisfaction for him. And I was like, all right, check the box. But what was really interesting to me is in 2008, when the economy crashed, right at the end of 2008, I was at a consulting firm. So I did Kraft. I did 5 years in consulting, and then I went back to Kraft. 2008, I was in that consulting firm, and I got a pink slip because of what had happened to the economy. They spun off the business. And in my head, I took it really hard, and I didn't understand that my job was not an asset. I really looked at it in the way of like, wait a minute. I thought I did everything right. You know, I thought I did. I went through my schooling. I got my MBA. I was climbing the corporate ladder. I was a high-performing employee. And yet, I lost my job. So that really marked a very important phase in my life where I said to myself, I really want to spin off and go out on my own. So long story short, I went into Kraft. They call me back and they're like, hey, we heard you're available. Would you come back? And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. But in the back of my head, I always knew I would quit. I always knew I wanted to be self-employed. I just had to figure it out. So fast forward January of 2013, I turned on a promotion. I gave back my stock options and I said, you know what? I'm going to be boss free. And people thought it was nuts at the time. And I couldn't even tell you why I wanted to do it, but I was very certain about it. And through that journey, I have been self-employed since January of 2013. And what I've done is just through the peaks and valleys of entrepreneurship, I've really recognized how important positioning is. And what are the things that I rejected for quite a while when I first quit my job was like, I never want to be associated with having been in corporate, right? And I even started that podcast that you talked about at the beginning, because people would say to me, how did you quit your job? I'm like, what do you mean? I just quit my job. And so this whole boss free society, right, concept came about, and I did a show with a friend of mine, but I rejected that corporate training that I had had. And then after really realizing like, wait a minute, I did learn some stuff. I did learn some really substantial things. I was able to work, and I had been in charge of $1 billion in marketing spend over my tenure. That stood for something. And so once I adopted that realization that everything is a system, and I said, well, I'm seeing that in the solopreneur world, nobody's talking about positioning, but positioning is so important. And positioning is really at the crux of whenever these big companies roll out a new product, they do so much due diligence on positioning. And it's only to launch a new product, something like a cookie. So I had this epiphany when I'm like, gosh, we do that for cookies, but we don't do it for ourselves as solopreneurs. And there's something fundamentally really messed up about that. So I started focusing on that specifically, and it really hit the mark. You know how you test and tweak when you're selling a concept? you're like, yeah, it's not, I'm not hitting it there. I'm not hitting it. But once I started saying positioning to profits, like, boom, it just hit the mark. And I'm like, that's it. That's what I should be focused on.
Yeah, that's great. There's so much to love about that story. I guess one of the things that struck me is when you lost your job in the first in the consulting company, and then you had the opportunity to go back to Kraft, but you said, well, I'm going to start out on my own, but I will take on that job and get the income in while I'm planning to set up business, which I think is something that often people don't consider as an option, and sometimes think they don't have the luxury of doing that when they lose their job. So good on you for doing that. And also, I love the, you know, the whole aspect of everything being a system and the positioning. Mm-hmm. So when you first set out and when you were doing the planning to get started while you were still at Kraft, did you kind of work on your own positioning there, or was it more about the systems?
That's a really good question. I think when I first was thinking about going off on my own, it was solely about me wrapping my head around moving from an employee mindset to an entrepreneur mindset, because it's two very different things. And I had initially thought, well, I'm an educated woman. You know, surely I can figure this entrepreneur thing out. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like easy peasy, yeah. Lemon squeezy. No, it's not. It's not like that at all. What was really interesting is that the mindset stuff was so much more important than the what you know. So I had this notion, it was this really contentious period of my life where I was just like, oh my gosh, I have to make it work. And I was so nervous and I was so scared because I was an employee. I had been an employee for so long. See, you had said you've been self-employed on and off for 30 years. You already have that wiring. Well, somebody that's been an employee for 18 years, that transitionary period, nobody talks about that. And it's a really interesting what happens, because first when you quit, you're like, that's right, I quit. Awesome. Like, you know, I'm indestructible. And you think you're so bad, right? Like that you quit your job and you turned away from corporate. And then you go into this incredulous state of like, oh my gosh, what did I just do? And then you go into disbelief, like, oh my God, I really did it, didn't I?
Yeah.
And then it's like, you got to figure it out. So that I hired a coach for, but moving into that self-employed mentality is so important, because I have a saying now that I say when I talk about positioning is, your business results will always meet your identity, always, every single time, no matter what. So even if you have a blueprint to follow, but if your identity at an identity level, you don't believe that that thing that you are walking on can be done, or there's a sense of disbelief, or it's not congruent with your belief system and identity, it doesn't matter. That's why somebody can take a course and become a millionaire, and that another person can take the exact same course and struggle and get stuck in the same place. It's identity.
Yeah. That's great. Just to clarify, I haven't been working for myself for over 30 years. We talked about working from home. I have been working from home on and off for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I had a similar experience to you, but went out and started on my own back in early 2007. And of course, just as I was thinking, I've got this, I know how to do this, similar feeling to you, the global financial crisis hit. And then people started saying, oh, we're tightening the belt. We don't want to spend money on marketing. We don't want to spend money on this and that. And I thought, this isn't as easy as I thought.
Right.
And mindset definitely is a big one. It's interesting you say the whole mindset thing about what we're being, what we believe ourselves. So I was working with my business coach yesterday, and we were doing some podcast recording for her, and the topic was around the model of be, do, have. So, you know, if you want to have something, then you start off with, well, what do you need to be? And then that dictates what you do, so what actions you take, and then you get to have the reward. So it sort of comes back to that whole thing. What do you believe? You know, do you believe you're an entrepreneur? Do you believe you've got the skills in your particular niche?
Right, and it is working from a place of who are you being. So it's not about, okay, as soon as I have $1 million, then I'll operate like a millionaire, right? That's not the way it works. And what we're saying is, in essence, the same thing. It's who are you being? Like, what are the attributes of that person and how would they operate? And therein lies where the opportunity is. So I deeply resonate with that be-to-have model, because that is the easiest way to look at it, is exactly in that way. Be-to-have. Who do I have to be? What do I have to, right? How do I have to operate in order to have what I really want?
And when did you kind of come to the conclusion that positioning and positioning for profit was kind of your specialty or your niche, and then get started on that journey?
Well, I really, when I first quit my job, I thought I wanted to do social media, because in 2013, it was really hot to do social media. And I had met an individual who, he was my mentor for a while. He was focusing on Facebook ads. So he's like, you know, you should definitely incorporate Facebook ads. So I started doing that kind of stuff, but it didn't really, I don't know, I wasn't really passionate about it. I'm not very tactical in nature. I'm more strategically minded, because that's what I had done in my corporate job. And so when I started really seeing that everybody was just doing copycat approaches and cookie cutter approaches to their marketing, I was like, wait a minute, how does nobody understand this fundamental truth that we would talk about? You know, very expensive ad agencies from big conglomerates, they would sit in boardrooms and, you know, hours and hours and hours have discussions around brand positioning, brand architecture, the brand promise, the reason to buy, the reason to believe, and all these other concepts that, again, when you looked at why they were doing all this work, was for an introduction of a cookie or something crazy like that. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, wow, they're, nobody is talking about how important this is. It's not sexy enough, though, because most people, they want to really focus on the next red shiny object, right? Yeah, yeah. The hot the new shiny. Marketing yeah. tactic, the thing that is going to be the silver bullet that is going to give them the riches that they've been dreaming about. And that's just simply not the truth. And it is no different than if you're going to build a house, you need an architect, right? Most people want to focus on, oh, what kind of curtains am I going to get? What color is my couch going to be? And all that fun stuff. And that fun stuff is fun, but in the absence of the proper blueprint for the architecture, you're going to have a house of cards. And that's, it's very similar to that. When you have the right kind of positioning, foundational, almost check the box pillars in order to ensure that you have the strongest probability of showing up in a unique space, so that it can make the competition irrelevant, so that you don't have to play the price war game, right? And so I could always tell where somebody is with their positioning when I say, so tell me, what do you do? Oh, I'm a life coach. I'm like, okay, you just literally just commoditized yourself. You know what I mean?
And that sounds boring too.
And that sounds boring
too. In terms
too.
Of a conversation.
Right. It's not memorable. You're not capturing mind share. That's exactly right. And so just really thinking about that. And then I thought, okay, positioning is important. And some people call it brand positioning or whatever. How could I take it to the next level? And then I started talking more about the identity stuff. And that, so in essence, when I talk about positioning to profit, it's, to me, it's a framework. There's an internal framework and an external framework. What I teach about positioning is specific to that individual solopreneur, the entrepreneur that is looking to launch their own business, and looking at it in a way like, if I give you the blueprint, the framework on how to position yourself, you will have everything from an external standpoint on how to stand out. Now, where the real magic comes in, because again, my saying is, your business results will always meet your identity, is that we know that if you don't have the identity of somebody that can stand uniquely, boldly, unabashedly as they truly are, you'll sabotage yourself. So I talk about this whole prolific persona, right? Again, under the very same framework that you discuss, be do have, I am a huge proponent of NLP. I believe in it very much. I'm a big practitioner of self-hypnosis, right? Where you're just really figuring out, like, it really is predicated on the whole B2Have model. And that happens, and I'm a believer of it because it has had such a huge impact for me. I grew up when I was in elementary school and I was physically abused daily basis. I say that because I developed a very bad stutter. so bad I couldn't even say my name. And this was well into adulthood. Now, when I was a stutter, I always felt like a giant in chains, like when you know you're capable of so much more, but you just feel held back. That's how I felt, because I knew I had things to say. I'm an extrovert by nature. And that was really hard. You know, it was really hard where somebody's asking your name and you can't even say your name. It was because I would avoid words that started with P, like Patty, D, like my last name, B, S, T, W, all of these words. And I tried everything you can think of, fluency shaping therapy. I took therapy at Northwestern. I did hypnotherapy, like a version of it, but it wasn't until I had met this gentleman from the UK and he came with this blend. It was like a hybrid of NLP and hypnosis. He called it neurosemantics. That's what helped me the most. And so when I tell people that I used to have a severe, severe stutter, they are like, what? And that's it. It's like your mind, right? And so when somebody says, are you a stutterer? No, because that would be claiming that identity, right? Yeah, I'm not a stutterer. So it's just really interesting how these things that have happened in my life has brought me to this perfect crossroads of saying, okay, these are lessons I've learned that I can adapt and share with others that is pertinent to helping them stand into their own unique positioning. And that's how I came
that's
up
a
with
fascinating
it.
Story. So I'm curious. I mean, this is a bit of a sideways thing, but I'm curious the neurosomatic hypnosis that the person worked with you. How long did it take to get rid of the stutter?
Well, what was really interesting is there's a certain framework for how you do it. It's meaning like it's confronting the reality of who you think you are. Like I would hide. I wouldn't say certain words if I anticipated I was stutter. And so he said, okay, we're going to record you. The instructor's going to ask you questions and you just have to let her rip. Like, be who you are, stutter like you would be so ashamed. And I remember there's so much shame that you feel because you're so embarrassed. And I remember seeing that videotape. It was like, it wasn't even me. And it's just almost like that, the psychological aspect of confronting that reality. And then it's like, don't hide anymore. Don't feel shame and fear and all that, because that doesn't do anything but give you more shame and fear. So there's a lot of different elements to it, like meaning I love the book Power Versus Force. So shame and fear are very low vibrations. And when you recognize when you can neutralize those emotions, remove the emotions from it, because nothing has any meaning but the meaning we give it. And just really recognizing that it's just your brain has created these synapses that they wire together, wire together. And I had created these pathways in my brain of how things are in my head, things I couldn't say or situations that I would avoid. And it's almost like you're taking an iron and you're ironing it out and you're saying, okay, what's the new story? So I would say that that's the most simple way to think about it. And that's what I help. So I am working on my own hypnosis program. I know people have this weird notion about hypnosis, but it is just literally, I always alluded to, it's not hocus pocus. It's not like the weird watch and all that stuff that you see in those ridiculous movies. It really is tapping into the power of your subconscious in order to claim more personal power is the way that I explain it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And the other important point I think about hypnosis, I mean, you're right, there's a lot of stuff in movies and that where, yeah, you know, people phone up and say a trigger word and then the person goes out and murders somebody or something.
I know.
Ridiculous. I actually saw a stage hypnotist do an act, and for some unknown reason, he did a mass hypnosis of people on the stage. For some unknown reason, he asked the people on the stage, and he actually had them in trance. He asked them to shape their fingers into a gun and point at the audience and fire the gun at the audience. Now, quite a lot of people, they were in deep trance on stage, quite a lot of people got up in trance and walked off the stage, which, you know, to me says that that's a really powerful proof that even under hypnosis, even in trance, people Absolutely. Will not do something that they don't agree with.
Correct. The suggestibility factor is only just that. It's only what you allow because you at the end of the day are in control of your will, and you're at the helm of your subconscious and conscious. So that's exactly, that's the perfect thing. And stage hypnosis is they see different things of how suggestible you really are. But again, at the end of the day, you have complete control. So you've not given away any control at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's some, you know, really good things that can happen. Like you talked about being afraid to actually say certain words because you were expecting to stutter. And to me, that's kind of, once you focus on that, it's almost pre-programmed that you're going to stutter on that word because that's what you're focusing on unconsciously. Mm-hmm. And tapping into that unconscious and changing that focus is going to make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
Mm. So you started using those principles in mindset training in terms of your positioning and how you have to be as an entrepreneur. So tell us a little bit, how did you then build your own category of one, and what does that look like?
Yeah, it truly is. What I do is focusing on specifically the positioning, internal, external framework that I talked about. And therein lies how I position myself uniquely, how it's different. So again, it's just those elements that I learned in corporate America, working with the biggest brands in the world. I've worked on huge projects, big brands. I was very, very fortunate with those experiences. Out of that, you kind of handpick and you say, okay, these are things that would apply to an entrepreneur, a solopreneur, that are really, really important. And that framework that I developed, along with the whole identity piece of it that I learned through training that I've gotten, that I've been so blessed to work with people and mentors that have just really shaped where I am at this point. And that was the one thing that I learned from, you know, the mentor about subconscious transformation. So I always knew what I had personally experienced back in 2003 with my speech, but then I had the power to do that with my speech, but then I had other self-sabotaging behaviors around money and the identity, like, oh, who am I to have that? And, you know, one of my coaches that I work with now, she even says, yeah, that whole Humbelina act, right? Where you're too humble, where you're too, it's so funny, where you're too humble to receive money. That's a big one for people, you know. Well, they'll keep themselves at that certain limit because it keeps them safe, or the perceived notion that, oh, that's too much, it's not worth, or how I used to operate was very much this force of, I have to work really hard, harder than anybody else, in order for me to make the salary that I'm making. Somehow I had equated the harder I work, the more money I have. And that's just simply not true, because I've seen other people that have created systems for their business, created structure that has allowed them to scale their time, right? Just really working smarter and not in that blue collar mentality. So I don't know where I was going with that, but just like the whole identity thing has been so huge. And so that therein lies such a big opportunity of what I've been able to relay to other people, where they get it. They're like, oh, that makes so much sense. Nobody was really talking about it that way. Nobody's really talking about positioning the way that you talk about it, having internal and external components to it. Once you have that framework, I always say, once you have those elements in place, then you can talk about, should I be on Facebook? Should I be on Instagram? Or what should I do for that red shiny object? Do you know what I mean? But you have to have that first part first.
So yeah, the tactics come later, and what sort of tactics you use can are clearly dictated then by who you're being and what your positioning is, and also who the clients are, who you're talking to.
Yes, it is so true. That's why it's, to me, what I work on more than anything right now is just expressing the importance of positioning, at the risk of not making it where it sounds kind of boring. But I know without a shadow of a doubt, it's something that is so needed. So it's about educating people to come up, because it's not anything somebody says, oh, I think I need positioning. No, nobody's saying that, even though they do. So my big opportunity is in talking about this topic and talking about how the big brands are doing it, and you should be too, right? That's really where I've been focused on. To your point, when you ask, well, how are you, right? How are you setting this whole thing up for yourself? And that's exactly what I'm focused on. But it's like one message that's differentiated that is a huge benefit that people haven't heard about as much.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, often people ask, well, how do I stand out in this noisy marketplace? And I think what you're turning that around and saying, well, you've got to position yourself in the right space and the category of one concept. That's how you stand out, right?
Exactly. Therein lies. Mm. There is a way that you do what you do in a way that nobody else does it. And if you don't know it, by the very nature of walking through that process, you can find the differentiation, adding your spin to it. So for example, with me, who would have thought that, you know, what happened to me on a personal level in elementary school and where I came to find out about neurosemantics and all these things that I do, and I talk about identity, that is what I talk about. And that's a solution that I can provide. And then the positioning on the framework side, well, it comes from being in corporate for 18 years of working with the brands that I have. So again, it's just crafting those experiences and finding that uniqueness that I put in such a specific way. Nobody's doing it the way that I'm doing it. And so that's category of one.
Hmm. So how do you work with a client then to draw that out? Because I think there's a lot of challenge or barriers in place when people start to think about, well, what do I bring to the table? What's unique about me? And I know from my own personal experience, a lot of things you kind of take for granted. There may be really little things like how to have an online meeting, how to run an online Zoom meeting. That's a topical discussion right now. And to me, somebody asks that of me and I might think, well, doesn't everybody know how to do that these days? I mean, if you know how to turn on a computer, that's easy, surely. But that's making an assumption that something that I know is common knowledge and it's not. So how do you kind of get through some of those barriers and when you're working with somebody and put together a really good understanding for them of their internal uniqueness so that they can start to develop their own positioning?
I think it comes from a place of experience. So usually people, when I help them with their whole positioning, it's discussions around, okay, well, tell me what you do. So I equate it to people express what they do as a rational value. Like, for example, and I give them the visual of an ice cream, right? So I said, imagine there's a cup and you have ice cream, just vanilla ice cream. That's the rational value. It's ice cream. But the intrinsic value is when you add the whipped cream and the sprinkles and the cherries and the nuts and the syrup and you make it really, really special. So what I focus on is like, what is your special? What is the thing that makes you special? And tell me more about that. And usually it's rooted in their personal experience, because what happens is they say, okay, well, I'm a coach. Like right now I'm working with a dating coach and she has a very unique way of doing it. And it's come from her personal experience, or one of my other clients, they're in the chiropractic space. And so they completely pivoted to something else. And so it usually always starts with the rational value. And then we layer in the different experiences and then we craft a methodology or a framework that they can use and own. Because to your point, sometimes we do what we do and we gloss over the way that we do it. And in that way that we do it is where you can put in some flair, you can put in some magic. And so I walk through that process. I'm like, wait a minute, why did you do that? Like, well, what do you mean? Yeah. And then you start to discover like, okay, like, oh, that's so cool. And then you just kind of formulate it in a way that is so unique to them. So it is possible to do that. And I've done it many, many, many times. So it usually is through just conversations that you have with people and then just some deep reflective explorations that they do, how they do what they do. So, and then also the other side of it is really having a very, very deep understanding of who it is that they're serving, right? Who's their premium prospect? Mm. but really, really at a deep, deep, deep level, understanding that, because people buy an emotion. And when people say, oh yeah, her name's Jane and she's a nurse and she's 40 and she has two kids, I'm like, that's not enough. You're talking demographics and stuff. We're talking behaviorally. Like, why does she do what she do? Why does she do what she does? Excuse me. And just really understanding fears, pain, frustration, right? Ambition, desires, that kind of thing. When you understand behaviorally and you can meet them where they're at that level, that's how, because everything starts with having a very, very deep understanding of your prospect. And while I'm sure you've heard, you know, avatar and this and that, it's like people scratch the surface on that and they're not going deep enough, in my opinion.
Oh, yes, I can't agree with you more on that one. And, you know, my regular listener will know that I talk about that all the time. So I
Excellent.
Have the ideal client exercise, and we go way beyond the demographics. We look at, you know, we actually use a lot of NLP in the exercises we do there. But yeah, we get into the core. What are their beliefs? What are their values? What are their fears and frustrations? What are their aspirations? What the other thing I like to look at is, because you said they buy a feeling, but what's the transformation that you can help them make? Because really the thing they're looking for is to go from where they are currently, which is a state they, for some reason, find undesirable, and go to a new desired state. So how can you help them make that transformation? And that's really the essence of your product or service then.
Yeah, yeah. But it, and then also on the positioning front, I mean, there's different elements to it, right? Where people don't talk enough about kind of the why. It's a little bit on the Simon Sinek spirit, like start with why, really, like why they do what they do, or the promise, the brand promise. And you always want to anchor back to your brand promise so that people know what you stand for, because people will follow you for you. They'll buy from you because it's you. I mean, let's be honest. Yes, they want the transformation, but they'll create that brand loyalty because of who you are. It really, really is. I have found at least that to be the case.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that. I mean, people buy from people. And I think there's one of the things that frustrate me a little bit is that, and you talked about, you know, people jumping in to use tools and jumping in with the shiny new tool because it's exciting and it brings variety. But one of the things that frustrates me is just using the tools or abdicating to technology tends to ignore the people side of things and the relationships. And like you say, they buy from you because they like you rather than just the product or service.
It's very true.
So with all those experiences that you then dig into with your clients and help them position, how important is it for them then to tell their story to tell a story around, here's my experiences, here's where I've come from, this is what I've gone through? I mean, you've told us a story earlier about your experience in your early schooling years and what impact that's had on you and how you dealt with the stutter issue that was a result of that. So how important is the stories to build those relationships?
Yeah, well, I think that just goes back to the importance of connecting at an emotional level. And if you're a good storyteller, like I'll say that again, the things that you're most embarrassed about or shamed about or fearful about, that's the real stuff. That's the raw and real stuff that resonates and connects. And that thing that I used to be so ashamed of is the thing that I now talk about with, where I have no emotion on it. And the best part of it is that it's relatable. It's like, wow, that's so cool that you did that. I'm like, I know, it's cool. And now, you know, and it's brought me to this place where I now talk about it, but I come from a place of knowing. So it's something that I personally experienced. And as a result, these are the skills that I learned. And as a result, I'm able to teach other people. And so it's rooted in story and for me to explain what happened. And then there's a believability about it because I went through that story. If I were to just say, I work on NLP and I do hypnosis, okay, cool. But that doesn't necessarily connect with you. But if I start telling you, listen, I had a really big transformation and here's what happened to me, then you're like, holy cow, that's pretty cool. That's amazing. Mm. You weren't able to talk. That's right. I wasn't. Like, literally, I had a horrible time, you know, having everyday conversations with people. And it's just really incredible. And so now there's that believability there because I come from a place of knowing and it's something that I personally experience. So it works. Story 100% all the time. Just like I told you the story of my I could talk about my corporate background, right? And me saying that. Well, and I always talk about it in the way of like when I was let go, I walked out with my box of tchotchkes, like the pictures that my kids drew with the crayons, you know, and then you kind of nest around your office and you have pictures and frames. And as I was collecting everything in my cardboard box and walking out on my last day, I felt really pathetic. I mean, that's exactly how I felt. And I'm like, holy cow, my job is not an asset. And I said to myself, I'm no different than the French fry guy from McDonald's. My job's not an asset. It could be taken away at any time. And people remember that French fry story. So, because you're painting a picture.
That's great advice. Well, this is fabulous, Patty. I could go on talking positioning and ideal client and mindset stuff for ages. But I'm just watching the time here a little bit. So I think it's a good point now to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that'll inspire the listener to go and do something awesome as a result today. Awesome. What do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
To not be fearful. It's not failure, it's feedback. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. That's one of my favorite sayings. Mm-hmm. My business coach always reminds me of that. No such thing as failure. It's all feedback.
Yes.
All right. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Probably to get quiet and to be in stillness. Just get quiet. So my best ideas come when I give myself the ability to be quiet and to focus on my, you call it meditation, self-hypnosis, quiet time. If I just sit and I'm not doing anything and I'm being in stillness, I get thoughts, new ideas and things like that. For some people, it happens while they're out for a walk. So I'll go out for my 1 hour walk and I'm just in nature, earthing a little bit. Other people, it happens in the shower. There's something that's very obviously fluid, right? About being in the shower and ideas just come to you. So it's about finding that time. Some people do it in the car when they're alone and they just have their favorite tunes and you're just thinking. And so it's really that alone time. I know, you know, for example, for my husband, he likes going on his 20-mile runs and he'll just go for a run. And he's like, it's so meditative for me. So finding the quiet time is where you're going to get the best ideas.
Yeah, I can relate to that. That's really great advice. I'm a keen cyclist and it's quite social. We go out in a group, but often I'm on my own and that's like your husband. That's the time where I get lots of ideas and thought.
Yeah.
And the challenge is remembering them until the end of the ride.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's why it's good to keep even on your phone, you know, to do in your memo app. It's true.
Yeah. All right. Now, do you have a favorite resource that you use most often?
Favorite resource, you know, that's a really good question. I'm a huge podcast junkie, so I'll put in a word in the search box on Stitcher. So if a word comes to mind, so for example, if I'm interested in, I don't know, cryptocurrency, I'll put in cryptocurrency in the search box and I just take a look at the podcasts that are out there and I just explore different concepts, or if there's a specific marketer and I'll just do in the search box. And podcasts are big for me. And it has a lot to do with when I go on my walks and I'm just kind of hearing ideas. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. Or, ooh, that's awesome. And you just kind of layer. It's like almost like a salad bar and you're taking one idea here, and then you're molding it into your own iterative exploration of what you would do with it. So I love podcasts for that reason.
Yeah. Well, we haven't touched much on podcasts yet, and that's I agree with you. I think podcast is a goldmine that's kind of hasn't hasn't really got the publicity yet. It's and there's a couple of really good search engines out there where you can just search podcasts. Mm-hmm. That's a really good idea. Just typing in a search word that's something that interests you and seeing what's out there.
Exactly. And I found some really cool stuff that way.
Hmm. All right. Now, what's the best way to keep a project on track?
Just accountability. In other words, I have a friend of mine who we work on our businesses, and every week we have an hour. And our thing is, if you didn't get it done, you owe me $500. So there's something about having that. I am not paying her $500. So it's the mutual accountability. It's really a good idea.
Yeah, I like the accountability suggestion. I like the thing where you go public with something, say, I'm going to do this.
Oh, right.
And yeah, I did one recently, and there's a whole story around that, which I'll have to share separately. But basically, it was a very long bike ride that was going to challenge me, and I hesitated for a long time before entering it. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to state publicly that I'm going in this ride, and I started doing that. And then, of course, I had to enter. And then halfway through the ride, I had a whole lot of challenges, mechanical challenges plus body plus, you know, the internal dialogue that was going on. Yeah. And I was very close to actually pulling out for various reasons. And I thought, no, actually, I've told people I'm doing this, so I have to finish.
You have to.
And I did.
Exactly. Isn't that amazing how that happens?
Yeah.
Yeah. Works.
Yeah. All right. Now, we've talked about this a fair bit today, but in a snapshot, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Really just focusing on the thing that makes you special. And so with all the billions of people on the planet, there's only one of you. Really deep dive and figure out what is it that makes you you, and then do more of the you that makes you you. I know I sound like a what is that? Those coloring books are the ham, green eggs and ham thing.
But yeah, Dr. Seuss.
Yeah, like Dr. Seuss. Thank you. Yeah. I know I sound like Dr. Seuss, but it's true. Just do more of you.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. And you know, we've discussed that in great depth today. So there's lots of tips during the conversation today about how to understand what it is that is you. All right. Well, thanks, Patty. This has been really fabulous. Now, where can people find out more about you and what you do, and maybe even reach out and say thank you for what you shared today?
Oh, you're awesome. So thank you so much for the opportunity. Probably the best way is I have a positioning structure to what I do, and you can go to positioningquiz.com. And then it gives you a PDF where you could find out the different pillars of positioning. And then on the back end of that, there's like a little course that I gift as well. It's a really great way to start to get the wheels turning about just how important that is. Because if you don't have your positioning straight, then you'll be doing random acts of marketing. And that's really dangerously expensive and you're wasting time.
Yeah, random acts of marketing. I like that. I'll have to borrow that too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll post that link in the show notes so people can click through and check it out. And I'm sure there's lots of value there to go through that exercise and that course. All right. Now, do you have a parting piece of advice you'd like to leave our listener today, particularly if in their quest to be a leader in their field and in innovation?
For me, one of the things that I learned a while back was if you read 10 pages a day of any book, that is the equivalent of reading 10 to 12 books in a year. And in those 10 to 12 books that you've read in a year on a specific subject or on a specific theme that you're really passionate about, you can really just catapult yourself into expertise level of understanding. Of course, you have to action ideas, but just something as simple as 10 pages a day has been fundamentally a game changer for sure.
That's great. And great advice.
So
I like that.
It's easy to do, isn't it? 10 pages.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. It sort of reminds me of our kids' music teacher used to say when I expressed amazement at the ability of young children to learn these kind of half-hour, 40-minute piano sonatas, and she would say, it's very simple. It's like eating pizza, one piece at a time.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Yeah. All right. Now, finally, who would you like me to chat with on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
Who should you have on your show, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, I have so many people. I'd be happy to, well, depending on what topic, if you're looking for Facebook, I could think of Kurt Molly. He's amazing. If you are interested in alternative healers, if you're interested in business people, so many people. Yeah, I have, yeah, a lot of different people come to mind. So I'd be happy to introduce you to a plethora of people.
Great. Well, we'll touch base after the show and get some more suggestions in addition to Kurt from you.
Yeah, would be great.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Patty. I've really enjoyed this and enjoyed learning all about how you tackle positioning and your thoughts on mindset and NLP and hypnosis and also ideal client and how you can really get to understand them, which is something that I'm very passionate about as well. I've really enjoyed it. I've learned a lot. So stay well in these crazy times and let's keep in touch.
Thank you, Jorgen. What an honor and a privilege. I loved it. Always have fun talking about it. And I love what you're doing. So thank you. Thank you for the invite.
Thanks. I hope you enjoyed that wonderfully engaging conversation with Patty and took something away from her episode. I love chatting to her about the be, do, have model and her interesting observation that your identity, or in other words, who you are being as a business owner, will ultimately determine the results you get. I'd love to know what you took away from Patty's episode. Leave us a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Patty Dominguez. That is PattyDominguez. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Patty Dominguez. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Patty there, as well as links to her website, her social media pages, the positioning quiz, which she so generously shared with us, and the other resources we spoke about in our conversation today. Patty suggested we have a conversation with Kurt Marley, a Facebook ads expert, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So, Kurt, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Patty Dominguez. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast. We've got some more fantastic guests lined up for you, including Glenn Twiddle, Australia's number one real estate coach, and Sarah McIntyre of Bright Inbound. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jorgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.